He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.
And we're going to start off this week's segment with a little tech talk, because I have three tech examples where owners were beset with problems on their vehicles, and I ultimately was behind the solution for all three of them. No, two of the three of them, and mine, of which I was a part. I needed the advice from a tech technician at a Jeep dealership, which I fortunately got Saturday morning before they closed their Saturday service center at 1 o'clock.
That's what a technician is.
Yes, that's what a technician is. Anyways, example one was a woman had a flashing battery warning light on her dashboard of her relatively old Honda CR-V with over 100,000 miles on it. By flashing, she explained to me that it was on and then sometimes it was off and all that. And I explained to her that when the light was on, she was running directly off the battery as far as powering the engine, and she better not try to go on a cross-country trip. And when it was off, it was possible that she was getting a charge to the battery, but because it was intermittent, there was no way to tell whether or not she could drive any length of distance or not before she might run through the energy left in the battery. And the solution was a new alternator. And she was able to get that done in a day where she was located when this problem developed. And
how much is a new alternator?
It cost her roughly $500. And the alternator for a Honda CR-V is a combination alternator and, what do I want to say that the juice goes through? Jay, can you help me on that? A voltmeter or voltage regulator, sorry. Alternator, voltage regulator. And it may have been the regulator that was the problem, but since it is part of the alternator, she had to change the whole alternator.
Okay.
That fixed the problem, and
she can live happily ever after.
She didn't get stranded on the highway.
The point is that
if you do see, you know, there are a lot of these, we've been calling them idiot lights for years because they replaced gauges that used to be on the older cars, some of them did. And now when you turn the ignition key on, to the start position, you get about, I don't know, anywhere from 10 to 20 lights.
It's Christmas.
It's Christmas on your dashboard. And what you need to do is after they've all gone off, you need to make sure that they've all gone off and none are staying on. And then the question is which ones are the important ones to pay attention to?
The red ones.
And no, not necessarily, because the battery one was an orange.
Okay,
and,
but you have to remember, just because we've done this show for so long, that the red... I called Robin, and there was a red, it was when we were having Isuzu troubles, and it was red, and it was the engine, and I said, "What do I do?" And he said,
"Just keep driving." Is that what I said, Robin?
Yeah, he said, "Hopefully you'll make it to the."
I got a call like that this weekend too. I said, "I have a red light. What do I do?"
Yeah,
it looks like the oil light. I said, "Okay, well, why don't you?"
Oil pressure light is probably red.
Not drive for the weekend.
Or why don't you check your oil? Which goes to the heart of a discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about can you check your oil or not in your car.
And what if you can't? And what if the light is serious? It's like this. Don't.
You can refill. You can put a quart
in. Pick up your phone and start Googling.
Google what?
The problem and the solution.
Well,
and
for
what
those that are tech
to
enough
it.
To do that, that may be a solution. But
I don't know. My favorite
I suspect that Jay's problem was maybe an oil level.
I did not have any problems. I don't have tech problems.
No, but you said somebody called you about a light.
So that was their problem.
And you didn't help them by saying put a cord in and then call back, which
Google.
I would have done if the same thing, because that's what would tell me was the first thing to look at would be to add a quart of oil, because those lights are designed to go on you get down to the point where you really should add a quart of oil.
I actually had a good one like that with the previous owner of the VW store. And
are we going to listen to this?
Yes, we are, because I called him and I said, I don't know why this light is on. And he said, oh, is that a da-da-da? He said, take it. My temperature gauge was way high. And he said, oh, well, you know, see if it adds water. And I said, well, okay. He said, open the lid. And I said, yeah, something's boiling. He said, you know what? He said, shut the lid.
Yeah, but what he should have told you is don't open the lid without gloves on.
No, it wasn't the lid. It was like when I told him, it's like, oh, yeah, it's okay. Boiling. He said, bring the car in. Get
it. Item number two on the Tech Talk section of this show is another lady who was driving a Toyota 4Runner hybrid, I believe, or a similar vehicle was having crunching sounds in her front end.
They do have when hybrids?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
During sharp turns, mostly heard when she was backing up. I suggested that she basically better take it to a dealer because this was a more serious situation than just a strange noise under the car. And it could be a CV joint, could be a front axle, one way or the other. She finally conceded to do that, but she didn't want to get an oil change there because she said she always got it at one of these fast lube centers because they were cheaper than the dealer. But I got her to go to the dealer to do this front end check, and it turned out she needed two front axles for her Toyota Sequoia or Toyota SUV vehicle. It doesn't matter which model it was. And she had 130,000 miles on it. No lights came on. Well, lights had been coming on in the dash, indicating some kind of problem, but they were not consistently there. And, of course, when she went into the dealer, there were no warning lights about that on the dash flashing, but the dealer found the problem. They actually found the original problem, and then before they returned the car with the one axle that they discovered was defective or needed replacing, the second axle started creaking. And this is one of those areas where probably if you're going to replace one side of a front end, you ought to replace the second side at the same time, even if it's not necessarily making noises that would indicate that there was a deterioration going on in the front end.
Quite right.
And but what she also found is she also asked how much would a oil lube and filter change be, because she was overdue for that, and that light was on, service engine soon. And the dealer quoted her $65, which she just blew her mind away, because at the fast lube center, when this included synthetic oil, it was $100, and she thought she was saving money by going there. So she learned that the actual dealer of the vehicle that you own may have better oil change prices than these fast lube centers, which claim that they're cheaper, but they often find other things.
And then before you know it, you drive off the lot with a new car.
It's good.
That's true. But this was a smart thing to have done in this particular case, because there was a lot of safety involved in the front axle situation. And
all right, so we need your Cherokee story.
So then the Cherokee story, which is number three, is I had another battery start problem over the weekend.
Was Jay helpful?
No. Jay was not helpful. Jay was actually suggested that maybe I had to learn how to turn my ignition off properly and take the key out so that I didn't run something for a long term, which caused the battery to be drained to a point. Let's finish here. Just a minute. The battery got drained.
How's that relevant?
Multi-hour use of something in the vehicle to the point where there was not enough energy in the battery to actually crank the starter motor. And so when I turned ignition, when I opened the door, the beeps for the open door beeps came on, and the light came on the speedometer. And then I turned the key to start, and everything went absolutely dead. Instead of starting the car or clicking or trying to start the car, jump starting didn't work. Using the jump pack battery, which I had available, did not work. So I had to call the tech department at the Jeep dealership, and they explained that with all these new computer systems in there, there is now a fail-safe protection program set up that if the battery does not have enough juice to start the car when it's run down but not necessarily dead, it goes into a fail-safe shutdown mode. And the way to fix that without being towed to the dealership, which is what I had to do the first time it happened to me 2 years earlier, you put a jump pack or a charging charger on the battery and let the battery get charged up to where it's got enough juice. The computer will then read that and allow
The car to start.
The car to start, and that's how I got it started without having to have it towed.
Was it really 6 months only?
Since the last time? Yes, it was. So, I remember where it was. It was in the center of Canaan. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, it might have been 6 months, yeah.
So
doesn't matter, but it was the same problem.
But what? No, but the question is, do you then at that point replace the battery? Is that something?
No, because I had already replaced the battery.
Oh.
This was a new battery.
Okay.
And
the point is,
a lot of people aren't going to know how to do this with these new cars if this is similar to other makes besides the Jeep. But I learned a lot about this particular problem, so I know what to do the next time without panicking and saying, okay, I got to get towed somewhere
and then
or
my
call
question
a
is,
AAA.
And we all know that I'm really weird, but my question, of course, would be, why does the battery keep doing this?
It didn't. I left the radio on.
Oh, okay.
The radio played for probably 17 hours.
Left the ignition
this
on,
I know.
Too.
The ignition had to be left on because if you leave the ignition in accessory position, just a minute, don't either of you talk. The
makes great radio.
Everything turns off in 20 minutes on accessory or off position if it stays on, so you won't run the battery down. So the ignition was left in an on position as opposed to.
And does it ding?
The door dings when you open.
Until the battery goes dead. Then it doesn't ding anymore.
But so the battery ran the radio. The radio was still running in the morning after I'd left it on all night. So I knew the battery was not dead. But I didn't try to drive the vehicle that moment. I tried to drive the vehicle hours later to do a real estate showing, and I couldn't use it.
Okay. So the question, though, around the dinging, because other people have had that particular problem, is they're so used to the car dinging that they don't realize that the dinging that they're hearing is a different dinging suggesting.
Yeah. Well, you have a dinging for many reasons. If you leave your lights on, for example.
But what I'm saying is people
don't. And you open the door, it dings for the door opening, but then you close the door and it still keeps dinging because you've left the lights on.
But the door is closed, so you're not listening to the dinging is my point.
I'm not going to make any dinging sounds on the radio here.
It's dinging enough.
When the dinging starts fading, your battery is going.
But how do you differentiate between...
The dinging won't start fading for a long time because the dinging doesn't use up any battery
Understood.
Power.
But there's actually something relevant in all of this that is... How do you get people to distinguish? Because they're not.
You're not going
to. In Robin's case, you take a post-it and you put it on your dashboard with a reminder to engine off when you leave the car.
But in somebody else's case, where are you from?
I want to apologize to my listeners for this little diatribe because this is totally irrelevant to our show.
Wait 1 second.
We will turn it over to Jay because he has some topics he'd like to cover.
I was born in Belgium.
Okay. So this is Belgian humor, which is an oxymoron. Go on.
Okay. Wow. On the bright side of things, and let's get into another debate in the love-hate next episode of the Tesla story. I was looking at car sales for the month of September 2018, and I think car sales are pretty strong. They're a little down from last year, September 2018 versus 17. I think the strong numbers of 2017 were helped by, I think it was Hurricane Florence that helped sales last year. So the sales were pretty strong this year in September. I think we're averaging the 17 million car sales a year, vehicle sales, because that includes small trucks and SUVs, as we know. And I didn't look at the truck side of things, but looked at some quick numbers for cars and brands. And brands, not manufacturers. Ford was on the top of the list with, I think, 188,000 cars. And then you go down to Toyota, Chevy, Honda. But what was interesting to me is that Tesla is selling around 30,000 cars a month, right up there with VW, BMW, and Mercedes-Benz. And the other interesting number is that of the 30,000, 22,000, more than two-thirds of their sales, are coming from the new Tesla 3, which we know was...
I believe that last month they made the last thing I saw is that they had made their whatever the quota was that they thought
five to six thousand cars a week.
That's bopping along now.
Yeah, and we know there are still a lot of problems. They have delivery problems. You know, Tesla is trying to build their own trucks to deliver the vehicles. So there certainly are a lot of obstacles in the way, but you know.
But they've reached their production level. The manufacturing they've reached level their
they not only production, but they're selling the cars, and they are most of the sales are actually to new buyers. Meaning, you know, we know there were about 500,000 back orders for the Tesla 3 that date back to
2 years
pretty
ago.
Much 2 years ago to opening day. And some of those pre-orders have been canceled, but they have been more than replaced by current orders. I think the orders that are being delivered now are only 3 to 4 months old.
So I was interested to see, apropos, and this is for both of you, that at least it was promoted that the GM auto drive, I think it's, no, who makes Cadillac? Sorry for being.
Yep.
Is it GM?
Cadillac is the GM brand.
Is what you're about to say, and the four that were
I'm wondering
reviewed.
So say what I'm supposed to say.
Well,
and
there were Volvo, Tesla, GM, the Cadillac division, and one other one, and I've lost this. I was trying to talk to this about somebody else. Were all tested for their self-driving characteristics, and Tesla and Volvo came in third and fourth. The Cadillac came in number one, and something else was number two, and I can't remember what it was.
And so I'm wondering about that self-driving. And the reason I'm wondering is because Jay said something, this was probably last year, but it was quite interesting, about self-driving. He said, the reason that certain companies are going out of the Ubers, et cetera, are going out of the self-driving business is because some technologies are clearly better than others.
Well, there's a lot of software downloads that can happen in this technology. Once the word comes out that one car is not as good as the other, you can be sure that R&D research departments are going to figure out where their weakness is, and they very likely can software upgrade their system to become equal to the best in the business, so to speak. And there's going to be a lot of technology leapfrogging as we go forward as they try to make their cars more and more reliable so that you can take your hands off the wheel and the car can go down the road safely. And Jay wants to say something, so go ahead.
In a nutshell, you know, self-driving vehicles, there are two components. It's, you know, hardware and software. The hardware is built into the car when the car is produced. The software can be updated at any time during the life of the car. And again, to be a proponent of Tesla, at least for argument's sake right now, Tesla updates their software on a very regular basis.
And overnight.
Overnight and without you knowing it. And in the case of their self-driving software, it has been updated very recently. And I read something about a week ago, and I read the article diagonally, so I didn't pay too much attention, but whoever was testing the car and was a Tesla owner had, you know, noticed the difference. So from one version of the software, 2.2.1.
But what I'm curious about is, as you're driving, if you are testing these things, if you're just a regular, like what is...
You're not going to know what the problem is.
Until you hit the wall, you don't know which one.
You're not going to know why your car is number four on the testing scale of this particular situation, other than what the tests proved if you read the whole article, and I have not read the whole article. But the point is, Jay's right, they upgrade as needed, as they discover issues. Jeep went through this with their 9-speed transmission, the 4-cylinder Cherokee models in 2014 and 2015, of which I was a victim and a recipient of a new transmission. Software upgrades came through, 2 years worth of oil changes without my having to ask for the upgrades. They were noticed on my service slip and the oil changes. The transmission got better and better and better, and it is now presumably upgraded to the limits of their current knowledge base for those transmissions. So software upgrades are the new norm for servicing vehicle issues where there are computers that run the cars.
None of which answers my question about how you know you're self-driving, except for the wall.
We passed that self-driving thing. The point is that everybody's got a mildly different program of self-driving capability levels. You've got the self-steering cars that want to take you back in the lane. Correction.
Barring the Tesla, which I have not tested, but I've driven a few cars that have you know, the level one and two self-driving capability, and we're talking again Subaru, Audi, Volvo, they all work. The technology is sometimes very different. Some companies use cameras, others use laser, radar. But the way they function is pretty much the same. For one thing, they you want to avoid is one component is the adaptive cruise control, so that you set the cruise control to a certain speed and then you follow the car in front. The cruise control will adapt to the vehicle in front. The problem with that when you're driving in traffic is that you're constantly adapting your speed to the vehicle that is directly in front, whereas if I'm driving a car, I'm looking 10, 15, 20 cars ahead, and if the lights start blinking red way in the front, I'm already starting to back off, not necessarily hitting the brakes, but backing off.
With the speed.
With the speed. So until... adaptive cruise control actually incorporates the data, the metadata that is used in with everybody's cell phones. We are still doing a better job
with eyeballs.
With eyeballs,
gotcha.
That's right. Which means you still have to be totally focused on driving and not looking anywhere else. Because Jay's absolutely correct, and adaptive cruise control or radar cruise control has actually been out for a number of decades. Because my 2004 Jaguar has that, although it isn't a complete stop-start capability, but it does follow the car behind, and I can set the distance that I want the radar cruise control in that particular vehicle to utilize, leaving a different level of gap distance between me and that car it is following. But yes, it does not know anything about 10 cars ahead. There are cars that are actually talking to each other now. Mercedes, BMW, Audi probably have the technology in there. And some of that technology may be also embedded in the computers of those cars, so that if a car, a BMW with talking technology and an Audi, and they were 10 cars apart and a brake went on, we might know that sooner than eyeballed technology, which is currently the best technology to see what's going on ahead of you before it actually happens to the car in front of you. Yes, Jay?
Okay. Then you have the other component, which is lane departure and the capability of the car to stay in the lane between two lines. And some cars do it better than others. Anyway, it's an evolving technology. It gets better every day. Most people don't use it.
A lot of people can turn these things off. This lane maintaining or departure technology is one of these things where if you are a lazy driver the thing will do the same thing you do, which is weave between the lines, and without correcting and actually getting the car stabilized equally between the two lines, which are their radar or other technology that's used for this, is following to keep the car in the lane it's supposed to be in.
And as with ancient cruise control, if you are trying to get out, does it allow you?
You override it by moving the wheel and turning.
Yes, some systems are more
cooperative
than others. Some cars, when you turn the wheel and trying to get out of the lane, you have the impression that the steering wheel is some vibrate. Others fight you. So every car is a little different.
Yeah. Sort of like the
and you're not going to be able to know which car is the best unless you go try them for hours on time. Yeah, a 10-minute test drive will not give you the best lane keeping technology car that you may next want to buy.
And again, all these new technologies in these cars take a lot of getting used to. And I jump from one car to another on a regular basis, and that is part of the reason that I don't use a lot of these technologies, is because I'm only driving a car for an hour or two, and it takes more time than that to get used to them.
Which is, again, a reason a test drive isn't going to solve your knowledge-based problem of what you're trying to
That's right. You can use it. Vending machine.
I want to round up again, and I started talking about Teslas and Tesla Model 3s, and I get back to my little one of my favorite subjects about brands, and it's a question that we're not going to answer today. You know, in a market where we more and more buy SUVs and trucks, how does this Tesla Model 3 become one of the best-selling cars in America? It right now is selling right up there with Toyota Camrys, Honda Accords, and a lot of the SUVs. And my question is, We all say we want SUVs, but then people go out and buy this really, really cool car.
We're being told that we all want
Tesla's
SUVs.
Tesla's not paid him for any of this, incidentally. It is totally his
no,
opinion. And I want to close by saying for Ford trucks owners, the F-150 is going to get the Raptor engine in it for late this year or early next year. If you want a 450 horsepower basic F-150 without buying the Raptor Ford pickup truck, just wait, because it'll probably be a $10,000 option at a Ford dealer near you.
He is, and Ford didn't pay him either. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.